presented here today for you to enjoy is a special 15-minute preview of this week's Top Rope Nation Extra Patreon exclusive bonus podcast. A really good discussion I'm sure you would enjoy if you enjoy our typical flagship podcast. And like I said, the only way to hear this full show is by joining the Patreon page. The link is here in the broadcast description. How's it going, everybody? It has been a while. February was the last time an edition of Top Rope Nation Extra dropped. I promised you we would do some of these this summer, and here we are, closing out June. It's Ryan Droste driving the car here on Top Rope Nation Extra for the first time in a while, but I am joined by a familiar voice that longtime listeners will recognize. In fact, I believe this is the fifth time he's appeared on Top Rope Nation Extra. We can talk about that here in just a second. He is none other than your favorite Hull City fan and mine, Tiger Rick himself. Rick Skelton, how you doing today, sir?
How are you doing, Ryan? Great to speak to you.
I'm good. It is very hot here. We are in the midst of a drought in the Midwest. It is almost 90 degrees here at 10 o'clock in the morning. It's rained about one time in the last month or month and a half. It's my lawn feels like straw outside. I'm currently watering the grass, but I think it is, at this point, almost pointless to do so. What's it like over there in the mother country?
Yeah, it's pretty warm. I've looked this up. It's 75 in your money today. So not the warmest, but it's going to heat up over the weekend. We did have a month or two without any rain, but last week was really wet. So the grass is green.
Nice. We are maybe going to get some thunderstorms tomorrow. We'll see. Cross my fingers. But yeah, it was, I just got back from Chicago last night. I attended Dynamite. We'll be talking about that on the flagship here pretty soon. Got back, kind of late, was burned out a little bit from driving, but it was really nice in Chicago. It was like mid-70s there. It's about a 4.5-hour drive for me. Here it's much hotter. And so because of the schedule yesterday, we actually pushed back the flagship, which will be episode 300. So patrons, you can expect that either Saturday or Monday. Justin and I are still talking about that, but we're giving you something to listen to before we hit 300 on the main feed. And this is going to be a really fun show, I think. It's a topic that you chose, Rick. And before we get to it, I was thinking about this, and I believe it's kind of odd because we've talked a lot over the years, on DM and back and forth in the Facebook group. I think you and I have actually only talked on the microphones once, and it was back when we were doing the live Spotify Green Room shows for Top Rope Nation Extra. This would have been July 2021, and that was the first time you appeared on Extra. I think that's the only time we've actually spoken. Is that accurate?
Yeah, that's right. I think, yeah, it was during the 2020 European Championships that got pushed back. I remember talking to Frank, I think, about whether England were going to win it. Yeah, it was during those group shows that you guys used to do where you called a lot of people in. So
that's right.
It was good fun. Yeah. I did that from my car. Did that for soccer.
Very nice. And then you've done a few, I think, three Top Rope Nation Extras with Kyle. You guys did one on one that I actually cut for our YouTube channel, the whole discussion on over what marked different WWE eras. That was last June. You were on one last September, best WWE IC champions of all time. And then a 30th anniversary of Raw and a recent Rumble history show this past January. And I know all the shows that you did with Kyle always got rave reviews. People really enjoyed them. So I've been wanting to get you back on here. I messaged you a couple months ago saying we're going to do this. And here we are, finally got the scheduling worked out, and you picked the topic, which was taking a look at some of the best storylines in WWE history. So tell the listeners what made you think of this as a topic.
Yeah, a friend of mine on a forum posted, and I thought it was a bit hyperbolic, but a week or two ago after SmackDown, He posted to say he thought the Bloodline angle that they've been doing is the best story they've ever told. And I didn't reply to it, mainly because it made my blood boil. But that's because I'm a grumpy old man. But
We
no,
all are.
I thought about it. When you asked about a topic, I thought, actually, that's been burning me up. So that'd be quite cool to talk about. And I don't want to trash it too much because I do think it's very good. And I think it's certainly the best storyline that they've done in years, if not decades. But I don't know. I started thinking about the ones that I like the best, and I go for a lot of walks, and I get a podcast on. That's when I often listen to you guys, and sometimes I just get completely distracted on my walks. I was just walking along the other day, and I don't know what I looked at, but it just made me go, Daniel Bryan.
Was there a goat like
Daniel.
walking around or?
Yeah, just walk, going for a walk, get some steps in, a bit of exercise, and I just thought, yeah, Daniel Bryan, that's another one to discuss. So, yeah, I have been mulling this over a couple of weeks, so it'd be great to talk it through with you.
Yeah, I mean, anyone who's in our Facebook group, Rick, they know that you're not super high on the current WWE product. You watch AEW quite often, but your historical knowledge of wrestling is extremely high. So I'm really looking forward to this discussion. I had to go back because I know on the Royal Rumble show that we did this year, and the Sammy turn and everything, I was really high on the main feed on the storyline itself, and I was like, I didn't call that the best story of all time, did I? So I had to go back and I said maybe the best story of the last 20 years. So I was looking like post Attitude Era, and then I went through some of the examples in the 2000s where I thought it was a better story than that, but I would not say it's the best story they've ever told. I would also disagree with that. We're going to talk about some better examples here. I think we'll get into some modern history as well because they've done some decent things in the last 20 years. But yeah, the Bloodline, it stacks up pretty well to those, although perhaps how it's played out since the Rumble has left something to be desired. Maybe we can get that in a little bit here. But if you look at this as a whole, I know you have in your notes here what your pick is for the best story they have ever told. And so tell the listeners, what do you think is the best WWF WWE storyline of all time?
I think this is tight because I do have some other favorites, and spoiler alert, they're Bret Hart based. But
No
I think it's
complaints.
no, I think it's Hulk Hogan and Randy Savage. I think that entire story, and I did think of another point on this since I wrote the notes, but I just think that entire story from going from Randy Savage winning the title at Mania 4, the way that the turn slowly happened, the way that Lust Hogan would get more and more attracted to Elizabeth, and some of the angles, like when she fell off the ring apron, and Hogan caught her, and then eventually the blow up on Saturday night's main event, and then the match at Mania 5. I just think that's incredible storytelling. It's clearly planned miles out. And I think the biggest thing you can say about it, which is where when we come to the Bret Hart stuff, that's the biggest difference between those and this, is that was incredibly, it drew incredibly, sorry. So the rating for Mania 5, the house show business, all the way from Savage as champion right through to Savage chasing Hogan post Mania 5. You could even make the argument that they should have kept the title on Savage at Mania 5 because business. With Hogan chasing was so good that they could have maybe dragged it out longer, which they definitely would do these days.
Oh, no question.
Yeah, but yeah, for me it's that. And I know you're a Randy Savage guy as well, so I presume you're high on that one.
Oh yeah. I could agree with that. I mean, I'd say for me there's two or three that are in that, like you said, it's a tight argument that are in the rotation there, but I could not argue with you. I mean, just from the business perspective, again, 767,000 buys on pay-per-view. It was by far the most Mania would do until the Attitude Era. I believe Mania 15. I think that beat every number until then. So incredibly successful. It was doing more buys than Mania 4. I think they did 650,000. So they increased business. You said the live attendance was up. Absolutely. And yeah. We've talked about it before on the pod, just the details. We've had the argument Was Savage actually the baby face? If you go back and watch that, was Hogan the heel? I mean, now no doubt he was the possessive boyfriend, actually, you know, husband behind the scenes. And Hogan was definitely, he did have lust in his eyes, Rick. Would you agree?
Definitely, yeah. Randy Savage was the baby face all the way. I think the point on the live gate is an interesting one, because obviously it was the second Mania at Trump Plaza. So therefore, although I think the gate was high, the actual attendance was pretty low. They could have a stadium for that, surely. When you think what they did at Mania 3, they could have done that again at Mania 5. I think it's a real shame. Obviously, they would for Mania 6. They go back to Toronto, wouldn't they? Sky Dome. Mm-hmm. So I think that could definitely be a dome show. The only thing I have in terms of the long term planning, the only thing I have against it is there's a famous story that Ted DiBiase was supposed to win the title at Mania 4, and it was the fact that the Honky Tonk Man wouldn't drop the that led to a change and Randy Savage being becoming the winner at Mania 4. So I just think with that whole story and the fact that if DiBiase did win the title at Mania 4, then I don't know what the plan is then. So I can't decide whether that's not really true, whether DiBiase would have just lost to Randy Savage and they'd gone on as they did, or whether whether they made all of this up on the fly based on that. But whatever they did, that entire year from Mania 4 to 5, I think is the best stuff that they've ever done.
Yeah.
By a mile.
Yeah. Oh, absolutely. You mentioned it. SummerSlam, Saturday night's main event, all the details, the little looks, you know, Hogan touching Liz's rear, you know, everything they did, and then Savage glancing at him. And yeah, eventually the Saturday night's main event is one of the most recognizable, most famous television broadcasts in WWE history, for sure. You made a interesting point on the dome. And could they have run a dome for 5? I think definitely it would have sold out. I'm trying to think where they could have ran that. I just had to look up when did the Sky Dome open. And that actually opened in June 89. So they probably could not have run the Sky Dome unless they could have got them to push ahead on the schedule a little bit. It wouldn't have been a little too early. I feel like we've talked about this in the show before. A lot of the domes, you know, like Astrodome was in the South, not traditionally WWF territory. Probably wouldn't be running the Hoosier Dome at that point in Indiana. Outdoor shows, you know, at the time would have been, I don't know if they would have taken that risk in 89. So, like, yeah, I think they could have done it. Their options were maybe a little bit limited. They could have, yeah, I don't think they would have ran Seattle, the old King Dome, at that point in time. So it feels like maybe they would have had to do it outdoors.
Yeah, I mean, could they have done something big like LA, like they tried to do in 91? Mm-hmm. Obviously, it fell apart, but I feel like that would have been a pretty big market at that time that they could have done. I get the dome thing. They were obviously, maybe they weren't considering stadium shows, because they hadn't done that many for a long time, had they, apart from the old baseball stadium. But they definitely couldn't have done Soldier Field, I'll tell you that for nothing. I went in the end of April, sadly, to watch a soccer match and not the Bears, but that place was cold.
Pretty cold, yeah. And, you know, Soldier Field then was the old configuration up until 2002 when they redid it, so it actually sat more people than it does today. So they would have had a bigger live gate, but, yeah, it would have been pretty cold in early April.
Yeah, it'd been pretty big, yeah. Even this feud wasn't hot enough to to take away that wind at Soldier Field.
Yeah, you know, you said it, though. If you look at outdoor venues, yeah, L.A. certainly, that would have been a massive crowd. I could have seen them maybe even doing, well, D.C.? I mean, the old RFK, maybe. Again, New York would have been too cold. They wouldn't run Giant Stadium at that point in time. Yeah, you would have to look at a warmer market for sure. L.A. seems like maybe the most obvious, especially since they tried to do it 2 years later. I think, yeah, in 89, given where business was, the hot angle, they probably could have got pretty damn close to selling it out, if not selling it out. I mean, that's a massive, massive venue, the Coliseum, but that would have been the angle for it, I think. So
definitely, nobody would have had to send Sergeant Slaughter any death threats, I think.
Yeah. So when it comes to Hogan angles in the 80s, you would rank this then above Andre, correct?
Yes, mentioned Andre on my list. I mean, I think that's another incredible build. I think it's a little bit shorter, isn't it? It goes back to, is it the when did they do the angle where Hogan gets the Wrestler of the Year trophy, I think, and Andre gets like sort of
February.
little,
I believe it was February. Yeah, early February.
so I think the build for that isn't as long, although they obviously try and hark back quite a long time on the